Blog Talk Radio.
Alrighty, and we even remembered to wait for the Blog Talk Radio lady to finish talking before we jumped in this week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com, and as always, OffTheCrossbar.com, crossbar with a K, as my friend and partner in crime, Adam Orson Welles, would be quick to remind you. Adam, how you doing tonight?
I'm pretty sad, man. I'm pretty sad.
Yeah, it is a mood of bitter disappointment in this room right now. Today could have been the day we've all been waiting for. Today could have been the day we finally get traction on some of these lockout talks. And I have been on a lockout for months now, refusing to talk about the process. But after what I have seen today, I just can't resist. Adam, how do you feel about today's turn of events? As it were, more hockey influence coming out of hotels in the downtown New York area than out of anywhere that contains ice.
Well, driving home from work, listening to Donald Fehr spouting out about, you know, all the positives that came out of their latest negotiating sessions, they seemed to be in a really positive mood, thinking, you know, everything's going to be great. The only thing that they were still a little bit off on was the length of contract and what was the last thing? Anyway, one other thing that seemed relatively insignificant.
It was the term of the CBA, I believe.
Right. That's what the NHL came and pooped on.
This is the big one now, apparently.
And I mean, you know, that was all great. Then I went inside, we got home after that, hearing that on the radio, fantastic. Get back in the car after letting the dog out and whatnot, head into your place, and hear that the NHL is poo-pooed all over it.
Yeah, well, you know what, I guess we should start at the beginning with this. You know, that the 15 minutes of elation that that hockey fans were treated to today, or teased with today, if you will, Donald Fehr holding the press conference, announcing that he believed, in his opinion and in the opinion of many of the players across the league, a deal had, in economic terms at least, been reached. They had agreed on the financials, the NHL is calling it the make-whole agreement. They were calling it some sort of dispensary payment something. It was a make-whole agreement.
Yeah.
They had actually settled on that, and that he believed a deal could be reached in the next couple of days, potentially. A lot of optimism there, at least outwardly. And then within half an hour, he was back on the podium. Unprecedented move. The first time he's been called back to a podium to announce that the NHL had, in fact, rejected that proposal.
Found that out via voicemail. Yeah.
And to be fair, in that press conference, he did mention that it was pretty much standard procedure for that voicemail to be left. It was just bad timing. Apparently, Donnie's little brother couldn't get to the phone in time. Steve must have been preoccupied after a day of long meetings. Maybe they served bran muffins at the buffet this morning. So now we're left in a predicament where, yeah, sometimes the dirtiest humor takes a minute to sink in.
Yeah, I'm tired.
Now we're left at a point where, leading up to this show, I mean, literally with 30 seconds left to go, we had turned off the press conference. We're watching Gary Bettman, who at this point, to watch the man physically, he looks like an annoyed elementary school principal. He seems to be talking down to everybody every time he speaks. He's got that, I have better things to do than be here.
He's talking down to everybody while his shifty little eyes are looking at everything but the people in the camera.
Yeah, and you know, it's that head wobble, it's the closing of the eyes and the little hoi-to-toi motion. there's a lot of sort of smugness in those eyebrows, if you will, as opposed to Donald Fehr. And you know what, maybe this is me just being all hopped up on this recent U.S. political campaign. But I look at the body language and I look at the physical demeanor of these two men. And it's one of those things where, you know, they always do that thing where they have the body language experts watch a debate with no sound on and then tell you who won. Donald Fehr is winning this one in my books. I just kind of like the guy. Maybe it's just optics, but he seems to answer questions more directly. He seems to have a more personable nature
to
him.
He's not a beady-eyed little weasel.
And he's not a beady-eyed little weasel. That's a fair point. He's not. So like I said, maybe that is just the optics of the situation. Maybe it's because my gut tells me that, you know, and I know I'm in a group that is shrinking. As to whether or not I'm in a majority or minority at this point, I couldn't even speak. But I still support the players more so than the owners. As much as I'm annoyed with everybody, I feel like they've done more. I feel like if you can't pay a guy for 13 years, you don't sign him to a 13-year contract. I mean, that's just, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned that way, but it seems to me that the way to get out of that type of commitment is to not sign up for that kind of commitment, as opposed to signing the contracts and then dealing with it 3 months later in arbitration.
Well, it's just like governments giving out ridiculous contracts, not being able to pay them off and everything, too. I mean, people talk and act before they actually think about it, and that's a big part of the problem.
It's
but, I mean,
true. But you would think that the world of sport, more so than many other worlds, tends to draw that type of person who appreciates the no BS. But then
not anymore, man.
And that's when you get into an issue where that's not who's doing the negotiating. Right now, we've got Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman. And last I checked, neither of those guys had ever laced up their skates for an NHL game.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, man. NHL, as much as we love to play hockey as a game, it's not. It's a freaking business. The only thing that matters is the bottom line, the dollars. Whether it's the owners for their billions or the players for their millions, it all comes down to money. And they're all just a bunch of spoiled idiots who are going to take their toys back and leave the sandbox and, you know, go home. And I don't know, man. It's just the NHL's main point for turning down their thing was the length of the CBA.
Yeah, that was the main sticking point as it stood today.
Yeah, in my mind, the longer the better. But you made a good point before saying that.
Well, let's just tell everybody first what the two sides are saying.
Okay, well,
so one side, the NHLPA, essentially would like to see a collective bargaining agreement. In their perfect world, in the words of Donald Fehr, 5 to 6 years is the right length for a players' union in pro sports, given modern economic conditions.
Right.
The NHL would like something longer, as most fans would, I think, when you just look at it from the outside. You don't want to deal with this again for as long as possible. So they're proposing the 10-year deal.
Yeah, so the PA actually came up with, I think it was an 8-year deal with an opt-out after 6 or 7.
For either side, yeah.
Yeah,
and
for either side.
The owners or the players' union could decide to opt out after 6, but there's an automatic expiry of 8.
Right, and what the NHL wants is a 10-year with that same opt-out for both sides after 8,
at
right?
8, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I mean, yeah, so explain it to me the way you did earlier, because in my mind, I really did think it was better to have it longer the better, so we don't have to go through this every 2 years.
And you know what, that's something that, to be perfectly honest with you, my gut tells me needs to be pursued. And heading into this, that was, I think you and I maybe even had the conversation on air, where I said, let's just sign these guys up for 12, 15 years, and let's just get this done with. But the truth of the matter is, and Donald Fehr raised this point in a press conference, and I actually tend to agree with him when I look at it this way. We're talking about a North American sports market which is turbulent at best in terms of its potential for revenue. We live in a world where this is essentially an entertainment industry. There is a product that's being sold, yes, but it's being sold for entertainment purposes. That's what we've signed up for. And with the economy looking the way it is, we just don't know what the truth is going to be 8 years from now. It's very difficult to make a prediction 5 to 6 years from now. And so to commit a decade into the future to an economic plan that you have no idea what the conditions outside of it are going to be, somebody in that deal is going to end up getting screwed. Now,
either way, the fans are going to get screwed.
Well, that's it. And the problem is, though, with a 10-year deal, you don't know who it's going to be, but one of them will be. Presumably, it will be the owners or the players, potentially both. And we're just talking about the economic reality of the way money moves in North America today. We simply do not have that.
But there's so much money being made no matter what. I mean, yeah, if we go into another giant recession, then regardless of what contracts there are or terms of the contracts, everybody's screwed. You're not going to be paying these clowns, you know, $5 million a season if the dollar tanks and people are losing their homes and all that crap.
But the point just being that if any of that does happen and you are locked into a system which is non-negotiable and non-flexible, then that the point being that you will have to pay these guys because no single individual player is going to take that pay cut. And then you're in a position where many teams fold at once and the health of the sport, when you look at long term, is in jeopardy.
But that's the thing. That's what really pisses me off about the whole thing. And it just goes back to the whole thing being a business and everything. You know, a normal human being would recognize the fact that, okay, if we're all going to go down with it, you know, or if we've lost the ability to generate revenue and stuff like that, we still want to do it. We'd still rather get something than nothing. And so, you know, agree to take a pay cut. Agree to do whatever it takes to keep the whole organization floating.
Well, to be fair, the players have agreed to take a pay cut in each of the last two negotiations.
Oh, yeah, no,
and then
no.
Owners keep inflating their salaries.
Sorry, I'm speaking generally. But, I mean, yeah, well, the players, every time you hear about it, I guess fear just makes a more convincing argument for their side. Who knows? Because none of us are in there.
And that's the truth. That's why I wondered, as we began this little segment here, is it just optics? Because the truth is, I'd much rather have a beer with Donald Fear.
Oh, yeah, beer with Fear.
Absolutely.
Kick in the head for Bettman and beer with Fear, no problem.
Yeah, well, you know what? I would also, to be fair, appreciate the opportunity to do the chubby guy in Philadelphia routine and just crash a Bettman press conference and grill him with questions. Because that was a fan who somehow managed to find his way in, and he got a good 5 minutes with that with the commissioner of the National Hockey League. In much the same way as, you know, you always get those historical questions. Who would you want to sit down with? Everybody's got positive people. But realistically, wouldn't you want to sit down with some nasty, terrible people? Because wouldn't you just want to know why?
What's going through your head?
Wouldn't you just want to know? And that's sort of what's going on with Gary Bettman right now. It's like, maybe, just maybe, I sit down with this guy and he makes some points that I haven't seen. I would need to hear it from the horse's mouth because I can't believe that somebody who is painted in, at least again, in my opinion, perception, optics, all of that stuff, in my opinion, comes across as the bad guy so often. How is he still gainfully employed? And how does he continue to have the support of so many owners? Because clearly, there's something there that I'm not seeing, and they're just not as good at selling it in the media.
But if what Bettman is saying is true, the owners are pissed. You know, the owners apparently felt very insulted by the offer that came up the other day or by the proposals, whatever, you know, and, you know, he's just the messenger. Bettman is just delivering the message on behalf of the owners and the yada, yada, yada.
Well, what gets me here is you talk about the owners being so upset. And one of their main sticking points right now, and to quote Bill Daly. There we go. Less than 20 minutes ago, was taking the podium at the Westin in New York City. This is the hill we will die on when referring to player contract length. It's so out of the realm of understanding for
Wait,
me.
Sorry, player contract length?
Yeah, the player contract length will be the hill that they will die on. Now, the owners want a 5-year limit on new player contracts. With a 7-year limit for players returning to their club. So whether it's a unrestricted free agent or a restricted free agent. The players are coming back with 8, but they're also coming back with a well-deserved head shake. Why would the owners sign guys to 10, 12, 13-year deals only to negotiate their way out of them months later?
Because they knew it was coming.
And, like, it's a game. It's a game at this point. And they're trying to win as opposed to preserving what is right. It's just...
But that's the thing. These are all businessmen.
Yeah.
Chris, even you and I, we call up Videotron, which is our local cable provider, and we sign on for 2 years for whatever service. We want to change that? No, sorry, you're locked in a contract. You've agreed to it. You can't do it. And then, you know, the same is supposedly true the other way around. But, I mean... These guys have made these ridiculous commitments, probably knowing damn well they're going to try to weasel out of it. But, I mean, you can't just – I understand. You could say that all these new contract provisions will start effective on any new contract signed after the CBA. But you can't expect to be able to go back people over.
Again, maybe it's me being ridiculously old-fashioned. Maybe I'm showing some redneck roots here. But I don't sign my name to a contract that I don't intend on fulfilling.
Right. There's nothing redneck about that. That's honorable.
Is this a new concept? Like, is this something that needs to be explained to grown men?
No, because really? These men are multi-billionaires.
Exactly.
This is what they do.
And it,
contracts and all that shit every... Pardon my language. All that stuff
sorry,
every
we get
day.
Week. It's fine. All
right, well, there's one.
It's like a PG-13 movie. We get one MS later, too. I'm saving it. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. We'll get to that. It just doesn't... It bothers me on a very fundamental level that a man can look another man in the eye, sign a contract that is 13 years, 100 and whatever million in length that Parise and Suter got this offseason, and then lead the charge against allowing contracts like that to be signed. I mean, this is again the exact same... It's the lack of logic, it's the lack of lining up, it's the lack of simple common sense. And I understand that the simple common sense gets lost in the legal complexity when we're talking about multi-billion-dollar industries outside of sport. That it's an unfortunate reality. It's something that frustrates me. But I can't go on a tangent against society here. But what I can do is take a look at a place that we as sports fans associate with because of the simplistic nature of it. Because when we watch sports, it essentially needs to be that fairy tale existence. It's our escape. It's the one place where the guy who works the hardest usually comes out on top. It's the one place where an honest effort, where a kid from the slums has the exact same odds of making it to playing for the New York Yankees as a kid who has entered into prep school at the age of 6 to play baseball. Sport is the great leveler of the playing field. Sport is the great equalizer, as we've said on so many occasions. And to see the corrupt mentality of big business get in the way of the game being played bothers me. Look, if you want to negotiate and skim these you know, sort of, and I'll borrow your phrase, these bullshit deals in the back rooms on jersey sales and on concession stand deals and on dealings with local governments to get arenas built, fine. Do what you need to do. But you don't get to stop the game. The game is the reason that you have these dollars. The game is the reason that we all tune in every single week. This is... It's beyond me. It's incredibly frustrating. It is just... It literally loses the reason. And it kills me.
Yeah, it just pisses me off. I can't, you know, we love hockey. Love to play hockey, love to watch hockey, love everything about hockey. But the longer this goes on and the more of this crap that comes out, the more bitter and disillusioned I'm becoming with the entire process. It's just, it's ridiculous because, I mean, it's a bloody game. It's a fantastic game. It's a fun game. And these guys are just sucking the life out of it and destroying
it. And on a very large scale as well. And something I thought that really caught my attention today, somebody who, in my opinion, and I know for a fact in your opinion as well, has been the ray of truth through a lot of difficult hockey situations. In my opinion, the best in the business, the single greatest hockey reporter to put on a shirt and tie every morning, Bob McKenzie.
Bob McKenzie.
I mean, the guy gets it inside and out. And to see him on air today, 5 minutes after the second Donald Fehr conference, and Bob McKenzie used the phrase, "I believe this is catastrophic." When Bob loses hope, in Bob we trust. And when Bob loses hope, we, I believe, are pointed in a very dark direction. In his opinion, we are almost certainly pointed at decertification of the NHLPA.
So, okay, I read a little bit up on the decertification, but I'm not totally clear on what it exactly means. So can I assume, enlighten me here.
Okay, well, I guess, you know what, first and foremost, before you even understand the process of what decertification is, you need to understand the immediate effect, which is decertification equals no hockey this year, period, the end. Because of the length of the legal process, because of everything that would need to be done, because of all of the logistics involved with simply declaring it.
If this is that long, would that even threaten the next year?
Yes, it would. This is the nuclear holocaust that everyone has been talking about. This is the big red button that the NHLPA has on their collective desk right now. What it basically means is that the Players Association would dissolve as a working union. Donald Fair would take a step back. All of the management structures would take a step back. They would essentially render themselves non-existent. It would spell the end of any sort of negotiating process. So then what you are left with is however many 100, 800 and whatever NHL players who are all individual employees of one entity, which is hockey, National Hockey League.
Would that be the NHL or their respective teams?
No, that would be, I believe, that would be their respective teams, but because they're operating under one umbrella structure, it gets really convoluted in there.
Okay.
So what you have then is, you have individual players who are under contract with their teams who would be able to file a lawsuit against the National Hockey League under antitrust legislation. Because technically a lot of the things that the players' union has agreed to are illegal. They're things that no employer is allowed to enforce upon workers as a standard. But in order to get other certain concessions, the players organized as a union, negotiated away some of those rights in exchange for getting other things that the owners didn't necessarily have to give up. It's just a negotiating tactic. I mean, it's the same in all labor across all industries. It's just the basic form of a union. Decertification essentially blows the whole thing up and starts from dust. So then you're going to have individual players filing lawsuits against definitely the league, potentially individual teams, because they had signed contracts that they are not fulfilling in terms of employers, and the NHL is now creating a hostile work environment in many, many different areas. So what you're getting at is essentially billions and billions of potential lawsuits, and we know how the U.S. legal system works. If one player gets awarded damages, there's going to be legal precedent, and then there's going to be dollars for every player who played or potentially could have played in an NHL game this season. And you're looking at, in my opinion, the end of the NHL. I mean, you might as well become a fan of the Indianapolis Racers because we're going back to the WHA at that point.
Honestly, it seems like it'll be a hell of a lot more trouble than it's worth. And I understand it's just the prospect of that happening that would scare the NHL out. But my God, if they actually did take it to that extent and lawsuits started,
now,
I mean, as much as I love hockey and everything, I think that would just be a colossal waste of time for the legal system.
And
for
that
everybody
is the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But here's where it comes now. Here's where it all comes together. The players' union could technically declare for this decertification, begin to file for decertification, and essentially take steps down that road. Once they've done that, once they've reached a certain point, there is no turning back. They are essentially committed. The only card they would have left to play is the individual lawsuits from players afterwards. But once they've done that and the decertification has become impending and the owners know that that's what they're staring down the barrel of, they may say, whoa, 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 wait a second. How about as soon as this paperwork's done, you guys reform as a union and we'll give you whatever you were looking for.
It's a dangerous game to play.
It is. But that's just it. I mean, when you want to equate it to something, it's the players pulling the pin on a hand grenade and then handing it to the owners and saying, well, you could either release this handle or you could put the pin back in. But either way, we're out of this deal right now. It's a drastic maneuver. And to be honest with you, I have mixed feelings about whether or not it would be effective. I have mixed feelings about whether or not it's the right thing to do. I don't know enough about it because of convenient ignorance. I choose not to look at a lot of things that might upset me. Kind of a big baby that way. Don't want to deal with the potential of hockey maybe going down that route. If I'm sitting here a year from now talking to you about hockey, the odds of us having a microphone between us and anybody giving a damn about what we have to say is pretty slim. And that, you know, we talk about the effect that it has on other people outside, and we talk about the guys that work at the arenas, we talk about the ticket sale agents, we talk about the people in marketing for the NHL teams and the accountants and all of those people. But to be perfectly honest with you, a very selfish side of me says, man, this also just sucks for me.
It does, man. Because
this just sucks for me. I'm trying to do something here. I friggin' love this game. I'm trying to carve out a little niche in this game for myself, even outside of what I'm missing watching.
And
is something I would love to hang my hat on.
And we were well on our way to doing that.
You know, are well on our way, because we're damn good at doing this. For the record, nobody bitches like we bitch about the lockout.
But that's the thing. Like, coming at towards the end of last season, we were building up some good momentum. We were getting tons of downloads, even tons of live listeners.
Absolutely.
And who are we? We don't know that many people on Facebook. This is just people who are out there listening in. And, you know, we had that coming into the season. We were ready to go. Everything was great. Then just, boom, hockey stopped. What do we have to talk about? We come on every couple of weeks and bitch and moan about how there's no hockey, but I want to be talking about how Carey Price is on fire and how Sidney Crosby cried because Ovechkin scored a hat trick against the Penguins the other day.
And how we can't believe Scott Gomez has 30 goals already in November.
My God! And how the Leafs are undefeated for the month of November. Magical.
Any word on how Scott Gomez is doing? Where is he in the ECHL right now, or the IHL? Where is he?
I believe he's working as a mascot in a European league. Dressed up as a tire.
Is he really playing for Alaska or something?
Yeah, very possibly he's an Alaskan, right?
He went back to his roots. And there was another pretty high-profile player who went to go play for some minor league team. Wonder how he's doing.
But
check that out.
What's his face? Ken Hitchcock.
Yeah, Ken Hitchcock.
That's cool.
You know what? Yeah, let's get on to a positive note here. Let's say something very nice about the world of hockey. Checking out Twitter today, just watching these tweets roll in as the press conference came to life, or the press conferences, I should say, and got a fantastic tweet from the St. Louis Blues showing head coach Ken Hitchcock in the full swing of things, coaching the midget AAA St. Louis Junior Blues, which was really nice to see. The old coach committing his time, committing his genius to some young kids. And can you imagine being 17 years old or 15, 16, 17, and having the opportunity to soak in whatever Ken Hitchcock is giving out?
My God, talk about opportunity. Like, just
awesome.
Amazing. And it's wicked for Hitchcock to be doing that.
Really,
because
cool.
He's a coach, right? Just like being a player, you got to stay sharp.
Oh, absolutely.
And what better way? Yeah, he could go anywhere and make a bunch of money doing it for someone else. But why not just give your time to these kids?
And that was so cool to see him literally coaching in a league that I played in. I mean, this is the St. Louis Midget AAA Blues are a team that I played against with the Atlanta Rage growing up. Like, this is low caliber. I don't mean low caliber, but I mean not high caliber. We'll put it that way. It's to be coaching kids at that level, kids who will, you know, most likely their involvement with the game in the future will be where we are, you know, playing some beer league, maybe blogging a little, getting a little radio show on, you know, coaching their kids' teams. And to have that opportunity to soak in.
Just be able to say, I got coached by Ken Hitchcock,
and
talked with Ken Hitchcock.
Jack Adams Award-winning coach. That's an awesome opportunity, particularly for kids playing hockey in a city like St. Louis, where they do support the Blues very well, but it's not a huge community when you're talking about minor hockey, youth hockey. So it's going to leave a lasting impact, I think. So, you know, hats off to Ken Hitchcock for that one.
Indeed. Speaking of the kids, one of the things I thought about during this whole presser earlier, and they're saying how, hockey might be coming back. One of the things I thought about, though, is, well, the timing on that would kind of suck. Say hockey were to start tomorrow, they announced tomorrow the lockout's over. You got to have a week of training camp at least. That'll put you right in the middle of December, right in time for, you know, around when the World Juniors start. What happens to RNH and the other guys who have signed on to play in the World Juniors? Had the NHL gotten back in?
Yeah, and you know what? That's a difficult decision, because when you look at that potential. Oh, yeah, anyway, obviously, you know, we're going to focus on Canada here because this is
Canada,
where we are and what we do. You're looking at a lot of potential guys. I mean, obviously, you've got Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who was not available last year for the World Juniors because of his stellar rookie campaign ongoing at Edmonton. Scheifele is going to be with Winnipeg. Ryan Strome could very well be in the New York Islanders lineup. We had an opportunity to see him just a couple weeks ago. Played for the Niagara Ice Dogs, and we'll talk about that a little later. Returning players, Boone Jenner was a physical force last year.
Boom.
And you know what? I mean, he's Columbus is not a strong roster. he's going to be not released. Jonathan Huberdeau, if the season starts, will be playing for the Florida Panthers. Dougie Hamilton will be playing for
the Boston Bruins.
Oh, absolutely. Ryan Murphy could be playing in Carolina. Morgan Rielly could be playing for the Leafs. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there.
So that was my next question, and that wouldn't be up to the players to make that call. That's up to the team to release them if the NHL got back, right?
It would be up to the teams to release them. Now, we're really in uncharted water. If this season were to start, there's no precedent on you. You could say, you know what, the junior championship is the perfect prime for high-level competition. Don't worry about training camp. Go play.
Yeah.
And these kids, you got to realize.
It's not the end of the world if these kids make the first 5-6 games.
And these are junior-age kids.
Yeah.
They only
get so many opportunities.
Well, they've been playing all season. Remember, these aren't guys like Sid, who have been working with their trainer and you know, skating on private ice time and not getting in game competition. You and I saw a few of these guys a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah,
they're
sure
in game shape.
Yeah.
These kids are just fine.
Oh, yeah, they're, 25 games into their season now.
Mid-season,
I mean,
exactly. They may not need the conditioning stint. I think what happens is if the team has already been selected, I don't think they're going to call these kids back. You can't put a Team Canada jersey on a kid's back, tell him he's going to go represent his country, and then tell him he can't.
Yeah, that's the worst Indian giving you could ever do.
Well, so in my opinion, if a deal gets done before camp is finished, before this team has officially been selected, then there's a chance you lose some of them.
I think, though, that would just be yet another classless move that would just be icing on the cake of the crap that people have had to deal with.
That's true.
For these kids, there's a very limited window of opportunity in which you can play at the World Junior Hockey Championships. You know, you're not going to get in there at 16 unless you are extraordinary, right? And these guys, as they get into their semi-pro careers, you know, you only got a year and a half or 2 years to get in and actually play if you're that good.
Yeah,
as an adult, you can go play at the World Hockey Championships if a team will release you. But I don't think there's any coach with a soul and a heart that wouldn't fight for their player to be allowed to go and play in this tournament in these circumstances.
But that being said, you were also, again, looking at the other side of that coin, where you can say a guy like Jonathan Huberdeau, a guy like Dougie Hamilton, a guy like Scheifele, a guy like Strom, a guy like Boone Jenner, had their chance. They got their year to play. Now they're good enough to play in the National Hockey League. And by the natural evolution, the natural process of this tournament, it's somebody else's turn to come up through the system. You're looking at guys like Charles Houdon, who was drafted by Montreal this year, having a fantastic year in Chicoutimi, may make that second line.
Honestly,
depending on who goes.
If we were at the normal point in the season right now, then I'd probably agree and say, you know what, let the new kids have a chance. But because there has been no season, these points, I mean, I know every point counts and crap like that, but honestly, nothing matters at this point, especially for these kids. I mean, yeah, RNH can come and light it up, and no doubt will whenever he gets back into another's uniform. But you've got to let him go and play. I mean, it's all a moot point now anyway, because there's not going to be any NHL hockey anytime soon.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, that's exactly it. We are going to have one of the greatest World Junior tournaments in history, because we do. Every time there's a lockout, you get NHL-level talent playing on the world stage, and the main beneficiaries of that are Canada and the U.S.
Yeah.
Simply because more of our players break into the pro league sooner.
I can't wait to see
into our pro league sooner, to be fair.
The
Scandinavian, obviously the Swedish Elite League and the tiered systems in a lot of European countries are doing fantastic jobs of developing players, but those players are not yet under contract from NHL teams. So, for the most part, they'll be free to go. They have different rules in international hockey.
I can't wait to see it happen, though, man, because, I mean, honestly, as much as I hate Boston, I am envious as all hell of them. They've got a couple of guys coming up that are going to be incredible. Malcolm Subban, he's got to get the start. I don't really see who else is going to be the logical choice unless somebody all of a sudden lights up and goes on fire for a while.
Goalies are funny.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know. And Dougie Hamilton, my God, like Boston, I don't know what they do to do it, but they do it very well in bringing up defensemen.
I can hear a collective shudder go down the spine of every person I've spoken with for the last 2 weeks, because I have been on a Dougie Hamilton kick since our little road trip. You know, let's get to him, and let's get to that little road trip, and that'll feed into your piece in just a minute.
Cool.
I want to talk to you first, though, about whether or not you think the potential for this year's team is as good a team as Canada has ever put forward for the World Junior Hockey Championships. I mean, if you were to look at the 2004 team, the team of legends, versus some of the names that you've got this year, it looks good, man. I mean, obviously you don't have Sidney Crosby,
Patrice Bergeron, Corey Perry,
and that's exactly it. When you're looking at some of these names, as far as I'm
Carter,
concerned,
Richards, Fanuel,
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Mark Scheifele, Ryan Strome, they fit up there.
Absolutely.
I think one thing that hurts this year's version of the team is that Ryan Murray, teammates with Boone Jenner, of course, in Columbus, potentially teammates with Boone Jenner in Columbus. Obviously, I'm assuming both of these guys will make the team, out with a shoulder injury.
Yeah, that's
very
sucks.
Unfortunate.
Definitely.
Very unfortunate.
But, I mean, yeah.
And actually, the Nuge may also be out with a shoulder injury.
Yeah,
he's
rehabbing
that now. There's talk. They're doing an assessment.
He's feeling good. Last I heard, unless there's something that you heard more recently, that he was pretty much fine.
That was what I read from his comments. I know that he's awaiting word from the team doctor. And I also know that if you ask any 18-year-old hockey player, are you healthy enough to go play for Team Canada? The answer
yes.
is going to be, I'm good. I'm good. I got this.
Yes.
Don't worry about it. It's just my head fell off. I'll tape it on. We'll be good. It ain't no. It's just a little stiff. I'll put on the maple leaf and go.
Yeah. Honestly, I can't wait to see it because, I mean, the 05 guys were sick. And, I mean, look at some of the guys and where they are now and everything.
And that's what I wonder now is we look back at that 05 team, and it's very difficult to tell.
Well, man, seven years down the road, we'll be able to have the same conversation.
And that's exactly it. I don't think – well, that's – I can't remember that World Junior tournament with an unbiased mindset. Like, say the name Sidney Crosby and try to remember what it was like before he was Sidney Crosby in the NHL. I mean, you can't – and the same thing goes with a lot of these guys, Patrice Bergeron, Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaf, Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, Dion Phaneuf, Shea Weber. Like, we know these guys by reputation. We know these guys by watching them for the last half decade, you know, ply their trade at the highest level on a national stage.
Yeah.
How good were they in junior? I don't know.
They were pretty sick.
They had to have been pretty good.
But, yeah.
They won that tournament pretty handily, but
your memory of them is skewed because of all they've accomplished since then.
And that's exactly it. So, in one sense, you would have had to have asked me the question, how did you rate this team immediately after the 2005 tournament, and then recorded that.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to ask me about this year's team
in seven,
years from now, like you just said. You know, in hindsight, how much talent was on that team? That's the thing about junior. It's not how much potential is on the team. It's not how many future NHLers or anything like that. It's very much about, what have you done for me lately? What have you done for me in the last 10 seconds? In junior hockey, because that's the breakneck pace of the game at junior. That's why it's the most exciting hockey on the planet. It's not the best hockey on the planet, but it is absolutely electric to watch junior hockey, because these kids realize they are literally a flash in the pan is what their junior career is.
Mm.
And they damn well better be bright enough to get them to the next level, or else they're going to be taking the next bus back to Chicoutimi, and they're going to be, you know, essentially what every other kid is back in their hometown, except 4 or 5 years behind from having skipped out on all that time to go, you know, ride buses around the Maritime provinces. So it's high intensity, it's high stakes, and these kids are damn entertaining to watch.
Absolutely, man. It's hockey at its purest, because it's not hockey that's been tainted by millions of dollars. I mean, yeah, a lot of these kids know that they're going to be making it eventually. But what? Good tweet.
So yeah, I got a very good tweet from a fellow hockey nut at Tucky Ducky, Amanda, quoting Gary Bettman, paraphrasing Gary Bettman, we shall say, quote, "The pile of dog shit we placed on the table for the players is now gone because they wouldn't take it." So just nicely summarized, nicely assessed. Yeah. I don't normally take to reading tweets live on the air, but that one actually got me laughing instantly. Well done, Pucky Ducky.
Fantastic.
Well done indeed. I'll have to hit that with the retweet later. So we're talking about junior hockey. We're talking about the excitement. We are talking about the give a damn level. Just being on a different plateau, just a different ballpark than anything else that we talk about in terms of watching hockey. And you and I were lucky enough to soak some of that in live action style just 2-3 weeks ago. Adam, why don't you tell the folks how this came about? After our second-to-last broadcast, I believe it was, when you had purchased the tickets before my wife had even given you clearance to purchase the tickets.
Oh, yeah, I mean, right in the middle of the show. We were just talking about how, you know, we complain about there not being any hockey, but there's tons of hockey. And so I went online and checked it out, and sure enough, I found some great deal on some tickets right through their website, Scotiabank Place, $21.50. Right in the reds. Perfect. Right at center ice.
And they were awesome.
Fantastic.
I mean, we were like 8 rows back, lower bowl, center ice.
You can see a picture of it on Off the Crossbar, my latest article.
So, offthecrossbar.com. Check that out.
And, we took the trip for the day, went out to Ottawa, found parking easily.
Yeah.
Everything was great.
I agreed to pay for the first round of beers if you cover the tickets, and I got screwed.
OHL pricing for tickets, NHL pricing for everything else.
Oh, yeah, man, at least it wasn't the Bell Center. And you know what? I would like to give Scotiabank Place a little bit of respect for offering the extra large size beers.
No, yeah.
I really did like it. Although, to be fair, if the lady who I told to go check out offthecrossbar.com is actually listening to this podcast, The poor woman who sold me the Mothers Against Drunk Driving bracelet in the lobby on my way in, and then immediately saw me walking past with the extra sized beer. I was not driving, I promise. We had worked out a deal.
Everything we were responsible.
Okay. I didn't have time to explain myself to her, but that was a really dirty look she gave me as I walked past. I gave $8 to the cause. I promise I had no alcohol behind the wheel of a vehicle. That is not how I roll. too funny. So we did get to go see the Niagara Ice Dogs versus the Ottawa 67s. Ottawa taking advantage of the opportunity to use Scotiabank Place, and really, the venue really worked for it. I had to say, I was worried that the smaller crowd might not fly. It might seem like an empty arena, but with the lower bowl seats being so cheap,
yeah,
you really got that great atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was crowded.
They did a pretty good job filling up the lower bowl.
Yeah.
Yep. And the upper bowl, I mean, the people in the upper bowls are brilliant because, you know, you still, any NHL arena, you've got a great view. And, you know, these guys didn't have to wait in line for bathrooms or anything like that at all. So they're just brilliant. But there was nothing, I don't have any complaints at all about the entire experience. And the level of hockey was great. And the beauty of going to a game like that where you couldn't care less who wins or loses because you have no vested interest in either team, it just makes it all the better because you're just looking at a good hockey game.
And you know what? That's exactly it. I did make a conscious effort not to look ahead to see, which NHL team's prospects are playing where. Obviously, there were names on the ice. Like I said, you know, Strome, Sean Monahan,
Cody Ceci,
Dougie. Grab Whack, Dougie Hamilton. I mean, there are guys out there who you recognize. Their reputations precede them, and you know them as soon as they get on the ice. But to not know where the teams were in the standings, I had a general sense of who's doing what. I realized that the 67s are not having a fantastic caliber season.
Nah.
But again, that's the nature of junior hockey.
Yeah.
You rebuild in 6 months during the offseason, and you can go from a Memorial Cup contender to a 5-game winner overnight. That's the nature of junior hockey. That's what makes it so exciting to be a fan. You don't get stuck in 20-year losing slumps in Montreal, Toronto. So it's a little less frustrating to be a fan sometimes. Well, you know, maybe because these guys aren't getting 10 and 13 year deals.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I mean, as you say in your latest article on the Hockey Writers, Dougie Hamilton is something. Like, this kid is just the real deal. He's currently number one overall for defensemen with 40 points in 31 games.
I mean, look, you're talking about a defenseman who's going over a point a game. And as I alluded to earlier when we mentioned Dougie Hamilton talking about the World Junior lineup, a collective shudder down a lot of spines. A lot of guys rolling their eyes. They've heard this song and dance over the last 2 weeks. But I'm on the bandwagon, man.
He's a defenseman. He's 11th overall in scoring for the league. That's including everyone. Overall.
Yeah.
That's pretty fantastic. And the guy has so much poise and just...
And that's what it is. And that's the perfect word for it. You hit the nail on the head with poise. We talk about Carlson last year in the NHL. He finished number 10 in the top 10 in scoring, right? And we talk about what an incredible feat that is. But now we're talking about Dougie Hamilton being near the top 10 in junior hockey. But I put him as a significantly better prospect than Carlson.
Yeah, man. I mean,
just based on what I've seen.
Well, yeah, the guy. He's I don't know.
He's everything you're looking for in a defenseman. You're looking at a kid who is. I mean, you've got his age there. Was he born in 93, right?
Yeah, he's born in 93.
So he's 6'5", yeah. Like 205. He's listed at 205. That's a season-beginning stat. You got to realize, these kids at this age, what I saw on the ice when we were there 2 weeks ago, this kid is 210, 212. He might be 215.
Yeah.
And it's the things you can't measure. It's the fact that every time he was on the ice, my eyes were drawn to him. With or without the puck. It's the fact that you watch the Ottawa 67s come into the Niagara Ice Dogs zone on a consistent basis. They don't even dump the puck into Dougie's corner. No.
They know they're going to lose.
They lose half the ice. You lose half the offensive zone when he's an opposing defenseman. You just can't skate near him.
No. He gets the puck. He controls the flow of everything on the ice. He's almost like Markov back when Markov could skate and his ability to just control the play and set things up and quarterback it.
But bigger and more physical.
Kind of like a Tyler Myers. Is he the monster? Yeah.
Yeah. Tyler Myers is a big guy.
That's the thing. Tyler Myers is a big guy, but this guy is big and he's got much more ability.
You really want to know how I compare him? There are two guys who are at two different points in their career right now who I would very much compare him to. And it depends on where his... I'll say three, depending on where his physicality goes. If he continues along the path he's on and becomes the physical force he could become, he's in the model of a Shea Weber or Ryan Suter. He's that good. He's got that kind of ability. Puck-moving ability, up-ice ability, defensive awareness. He's your complete package defenseman where you can trust him in all situations. And he's got the potential to crush some skulls. Okay. And we see him do it in the junior level. Now, a lot of guys will lose that edge. A lot of guys, particularly with his intelligence, will lose that edge when they hit the NHL.
Because they want longevity.
And because for the first couple of years, they're not going to be at that full size. Here's a kid who's going to top out at 6'5"? I mean, he's going to top out at 230, 235 when he hits playing weight. 225 mid-season when he's been skating a lot. Hmm. So he's not 20 pounds to go at this point. When he comes in, he's going to learn that NHL game quickly because he's an intelligent kid. He may lose that physical edge. If he does, I put him more on a Nick Lidstrom.
I think,
and that's a big compliment.
Honestly, yeah, you're in either way to go. He's in fantastic territory.
Yeah.
But I think no matter what, it's kind of like when Subban was getting in all that trouble, well, media trouble for taking liberties and stuff like that, and just mouthing off. Well, supposedly mouthing off that. You know, you come into the NHL, it's a different game. You've got to give respect to the guys. And I think that would be the only major factor in his curtailing the physicality of his play. Because you don't want to go in and just, you know, destroy somebody in your first, you know, couple games or whatever.
Well,
I think, though,
two schools of thought on that as well.
Well, yeah, come in and you know, make a name for yourself, fine. But I think, as you say, he's a smart guy. And I think that he definitely will go to the physical side because it would be wasted if he didn't. His size, his ability to move, I just don't think he's going to be a full-on crusher and like that, but I don't think he's ever going to hesitate to use his size to his advantage.
No, and that's where I think you see that new model. I think that's where you see Shea Weber setting the new prototype for a defenseman. I think that's what every NHL team is looking for, is that complete package. I mean, it's, in a lot of senses, what a guy like Datsyuk is doing for a lot of the forward positions, where you can just set the bar a little higher. Because you see a guy with that kind of talent playing both ends of the ice and playing a responsible brand of hockey, and all of a sudden, a lot of the lines in between roles disappear. A lot of the lines between stay-at-home defensemen and power play quarterbacks start to get blurry. A lot of lines between...
But ideally, that's what you want in any of your players, is the versatility to be able to go onto the ice at any point in the game and make a difference.
Well, there's two schools of thought on that as well. And again, it's, do you want that well-rounded team, or do you want that specificity? I mean, when you look at it...
I think it'd be a waste. I think it would be a waste of a guy like him, because he's got the head to quarterback a power play.
I agree, but Nick Lidstrom was a big guy, too. He did just fine without
him. Well, yeah, for sure.
And but he may have been the greatest defenseman to ever play the game.
Exactly, but that's the thing. He's been around for a long time. This, as you said, is the new school of NHL. It's the new... There's no longer room for a goon in the NHL. You know, you don't have the guy whose specific job... Well, I mean, you do, but they're dying out. You don't have the guy whose job is to go out there and beat the crap out of someone to enforce something. You need guys who can go and get in a fight if they need to, and who can also turn around, though, and roof at top shelf coming in alone, or set up that power play, have the shot from the point, whatever. And that's the thing. You need a guy like this with his size and his head for the game.
It's, I agree. We're talking about the evolution of the game. We really are. And when you look at a guy like Dougie Hamilton, you are seeing that hybrid style. You're seeing a guy who's got the size and the ability to move, but you're also seeing a guy with the intelligence, and you're seeing a guy who can set it up. And like I said, we said ourselves driving home from the arena that day, here's a guy who was out on the ice with no less than 3, 4, sometimes 5 or 6 future NHLers at any given moment. Canadian Major Junior Hockey is no joke. This is where the talent comes from. If you're a North American player, period, the end. This is the funnel. This is the route. This is the path to the NHL. This is junior hockey. These kids are 17, 18, 19 years old. But this is no joke. These guys are for real. And he looked like a man playing against children. I mean, he was
head and shoulders above the rest, literally and figuratively.
Exactly. And you look at a guy who isn't done yet.
No, not that long.
The thing is, it looked like you had put Zdeno Chara out on the ice and to play against them. Except Zdeno Chara was not that good when he was that young.
No.
And so you wonder, I mean, obviously anything can happen over the course of a career. You're never more than one wrong step off the bus from busting an ankle and never being the same player again at any point. But when you talk about ceiling and you talk about potential, I can honestly say that after watching a ton of live hockey in my life, I don't think I've ever seen a prospect that impressive at that age.
Can you imagine carrying the puck across center ice, getting to a blue line, where you've got 6'5" of Dougie Hamilton and 15'12" of Zdeno Chara? Like, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And talk about a good... I'm not necessarily Chara's biggest fan after the whole patch or anything, and I know I'm probably beating a dead horse in that, so I'm not even going to get into that. But... Great mentor.
You're being a horse skeleton at this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's longer. But, I mean, great mentor for the kid, too, right?
Yeah, it doesn't... Yeah, he can, you know, teach him how many pounds of goat meat to eat a day. No, it's... You're right. I mean, you talk about that being the perfect timing, the perfect propensity. I mean, the Boston Bruins as an organization, they find defensemen like the Canadians find goaltenders. And every team has its MO. They have its... that type of player that they love to go get. And the Bruins have had it in Bobby Orr. They've had it in Ray Bourque. They've had it in Zdeno Chara for the last couple of years. And it looks like they will have it for the foreseeable future in Dougie Hamilton.
And it looks like they might have even found themselves a pretty good goalie, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does look that way. Which is good, because, you know, between Tuukka Rask and Tim Thomas, you've got, you know... Yeah, you're... You're a couple.
Speaking of dead horses,
you're a couple flakes short of a snow cone on that next.
So, anybody else stand out in that game for you? Anybody else really?
I like Cody Ceci. He didn't have his best game though.
I like Cody Ceci, but more based on what I already knew about.
Well, that's it. His reputation preceded him.
Yeah, I had to be looking for the positive sides of Cody Ceci's game. And again, it was one of those names that jumped out. So maybe I was a little critical because my eyes were on him more often.
Who scored
and
that wicked,
had that C.
Who scored that wicked little dangler?
All I know is that it was number 15 for the Niagara Ice Dogs because I remember thinking that guy got the jersey number right. But I honestly don't know. It was a little roly-poly fellow with a 5 o'clock shadow who, when they showed his picture on the Jumbotron, looked like he should not have had a 5 o'clock shadow. He looked like he was about 12.
Oh, man.
I'll tell you one guy who really did impress me one hell of a lot, and it is a draft-eligible player this year. So, you know, if you're a GM who is really mixed up in his priorities and is listening to me talk right now...
Brooke Hidnick, by the way.
There you go.
Hidnick.
So if you're a GM who is, like I said, neglecting your responsibilities to make hockey happen and is for some reason wasting your time listening to us, go check out Sean Monahan. I know he's on your register. I know he's on your radar. I know this guy's name will ring a lot of bells out there. Here's a guy who I was surprised how small he was on the ice because he has that reputation as a physical player, as a guy who's not afraid to get his nose dirty and his elbows bloody, and a guy who really, really set the tone for a lot of the game and then disappeared after getting run over quite badly. He got rocked in that game.
Pwned.
It was a good solid shoulder to chest motion, but when he went down, it looked like he was favoring the knee when he came back up. Lots of worried sighs from the Ottawa 67s fans. But then it's just one of those moments that sort of sticks with you. I was watching the trainer work on him, and all of a sudden he hopped the boards quickly with the trainer literally not just barely getting the chance to pat down the tape.
Mm-hmm.
And within 15 seconds, he had flattened the guy who hit him. I mean, immediately. It was like he had a homing beacon on the guy. The guy... Monahan jumps the boards. The guy takes the pass, and within 3 seconds, he's flat on his back staring at the rafters. It's just one of those moments. One of those things that when you're watching it, you know what? Monahan didn't even appear on the score sheet that night, but one of those moments of just pure character where, as you see it occur, you can't help but think to yourself, mental note, I bet that kid does that again.
But you see, you look at that kid, and he went out and got vengeance for being struck down. Did it well, did it very clean. And that's reflected in his stats, too. He's played 24 games, 36 points. He's only got 8 penalty minutes. You know, like, I mean, that's...
Exactly.
He's not... He wasn't doing it out of spite. He was doing it to say...
Well, that's just it. I mean, he's not a dirty player.
Nope.
He's not.
No. He just, you know, eye for an eye. Go, you hit me down, I'm going to get you back.
But
and it wasn't...
But in a clean shot, found
absolutely.
The guy in his right moment with the puck.
Yep.
He did it right.
Yeah, it wasn't a spiteful thing. It was just a, you know... Got you back, sucker.
Yep.
See you on next shift. You know, and that it's awesome. It's just great. It's good to see that, you know, there are players like that still coming up. And he's not that small of a guy either. He's still listed at 6'2".
6'2", but, I mean, he looked like he was about 105 pounds. Maybe he's
listed at 193.
Really?
Yep.
I don't know about that.
Maybe that's why he's only played 24 games. Maybe he's got a little bit of a thyroid problem.
Check his pockets for sand the next time they weigh him in. I don't know about all that. So we are at that point in the show where normally in our lockout editions, we would be drawing to a close. We're going to give you just a little bit of bonus coverage today. We may even hear from the notorious, the elusive, the man in the shadows, the man behind the beard, Mr. James Foster, if he decides to call us in. If not, he is out caught shopping for baby supplies. So we completely understand. But today is a very sad, sad day in the history of hockey. Today is December 6th.
A day which will live in infamy.
A day which will live in infamy. And I can honestly say the anniversary of the day that my childhood ended. It was on this day in 1995 that we were all witness to La Trade. The trade of Patrick Waugh from the Montreal Canadiens to the Colorado Avalanche at the hands of one gum-chewing, bench-pacing moron named Mario Tremblay. Sorry, not very unbiased in my opinion. He hung him out to dry. It was December 2nd, 1995.
Nine goals
in an 11-1 loss against the Detroit Red Wings. If there's one thing you could never do to Patrick Waugh, it was step on his pride. You can say what you want about his arrogance. You can say what you want about the wink. You can say what you want about the two Stanley Cups plugging his ears. But at the end of the day,
he backed it up, man. He had his skill.
It ain't bragging if you back it up, exactly. Right? And that's what Muhammad Ali said. What was he thinking? What was he thinking? Adam, take me back. Actually, you know what? I've never heard this story from your perspective. I've told this story several times over. Shameless plug. I believe it is chapter 5 in my upcoming book, Just a Game, a highlight reel of lessons learned from a life in sport. Take me back to your impressions of that as a, what would you have been, 12-year-old child at that point?
95, yeah, I was 12.
Yeah. As a 12-year-old Montreal Canadiens fan here in Montreal, because I had my own perspectives. I was a Canadiens fan on the East Coast. And on the East Coast, there are two types of fans, Habs fans and Leafs fans. Here, there are just Habs fans, I would presume, for the most part. What was it like? What was it like in this city at that moment?
It was bad, man. I mean, Patrick Waugh was my freaking hero. Patrick Waugh was the king of goaltenders. Now, I think it was 5 goals in the first period, 4 goals in the second, on 26 shots. He was having an off game. It just wasn't his night. It happens. It happens to goalies. I had the exact same thing last night.
It does happen.
Not in that kind of stage. But, I mean, it got to the point where the crowd were cheering sarcastically when he make an easy save.
To be fair, he mock-celebrated.
For sure.
Yeah. They didn't mock-cheer
him. They did it. No, but they did it a bit more
after. It was. I mean,
Patrick
was nothing if he wasn't proud. And that was, you could feel it unfolding when you watched that game.
Yeah, I mean, they finally put Jablonski in after Waugh had been hung out to dry like yesterday's laundry, and it sucked to see it, man. I mean, you don't do that to a guy who has done so much for you. Tremblay is an idiot.
Yeah.
Was then, is now.
He is. And,
I don't know if Waugh did something with Tremblay's daughter or what it was to deserve the way he was treated that night. But
this is just a podcast, right? Yeah, okay. We're just podcast. Good. I don't know. Was she a stripper? I heard that's all he marries. He's losing half his money to strippers. Stop marrying strippers, Patrick. Come on.
Oh, man. But, I mean, it sucked to see it. And you knew something big was going to happen after that because you don't do that to that guy. And
it's true.
It was the worst day of my hockey life because I was also pissed at Patrick for that. As much as I understood how screwed over he was, I was angry at him for leaving too. And
of course,
I pretty much gave up on Patrick and moved over to Martin Brodeur.
See, and that's an interesting dilemma because, you know, and again, I say it in the book. It'll probably be out March, April. Everyone go check that out.
Okay.
On the shelves, promoted by this
guy
right
here.
Too. We'll be able to buy it online. Get it on your e-readers. I said it in the book. I was 11 years old at the time, diehard Montreal Canadiens fan. And in the weeks that followed, you know, I have a small handful of memories that really stand out from that experience. It honestly did traumatize me for a little while. It may have been one of the flashbulb moments in my life. I'll tell you about the moment I found out after. But the poster, okay? I had the black poster with Patrick Waugh's helmet, okay? And the other one of him in the home white jersey with the red and blue coho pads that said St. Patrick across the top.
I had the wall.
The wall. Absolutely. With the bricks behind him?
Yep.
Yeah. I my friend had that one as well growing up. And I didn't know what to do with the poster. I had no idea. And it sounds like such a trivial thing, but as a child...
Not as a kid, man.
As a child, I didn't know what to do with those posters. And I remember my dad, it was, again, obviously December 6th,
So for Christmas that year, 3 weeks later, my dad gets Colorado Avalanche, exact same poster. Now, it wasn't St. Patrick's helmet. He didn't have the helmet painted for a little while.
At that point.
Exactly. He was rocking the white helmet, the David Abisher, as I call it.
Yeah.
So he was rocking the white helmet for a while, but it was a Colorado Avalanche helmet. And it was an all-black background. It was the same size as position. It had to have been the same company, right?
Mm.
So I understand what my dad was trying to do. But that poster caused me so much stress.
It's a bitter pill, man.
In my life. Because I took down the Patrick Waugh poster with the Canadiens helmet. And I put that one up.
But every time you
went... And it went on and off and on and off that wall for weeks. My mom was so pissed off at me with all the thumbtack holes in the wall. But I didn't... I put it up and I couldn't bear to look at it. And I'd take it down and I couldn't bear to look at the empty space where the Patrick Waugh poster should be. Both of them broke my heart, and I couldn't understand why. I didn't know, as an 11-year-old kid, whether it was my job to start hating St. Patrick or to start liking the Colorado Avalanche. So I tried both, and neither worked. And it was very much the first time in my life that I realized that sometimes shit just happens. Sometimes something you love will just break your heart. And there's nothing you can do about it. That's what's going to happen.
And
I literally say, my childhood ended December 6th, 1995, in the front seat of a Pontiac Firefly, on my way from a dentist appointment that was supposed to be headed to my grandmother's house, so that my mom could drop me off and then go to work a shift at the local shopping mall. She was assistant manager at Jeans Experts, and she was on her way to work. She had taken me to the dentist appointment, and I was going to have this awesome day. Just because she needed to get to work and school was on the other side of town, I was going to have this fantastic day. Go spend the day with Nanny. It was going to be awesome. Nanny let me do whatever I wanted, and she gave me the remote anytime I got the day off school. It was sweet. And my mom never even made it to work that day. Because as we were pulling to a stop at a red light at the intersection of Kings Road and Sydney River, the radio announcer came on. Breaking news out of the world of sports this morning. Star goaltender Patrick Waugh has been traded to the Colorado Avalanche, along with captain Mike Keane. Blah, blah, blah. I honest to God went numb. I froze. It was what I would only learn later was what is called a flashbulb moment, where every detail of what you see, you feel, you hear, you smell becomes permanently frozen because of the emotional importance. And it sounds so silly to say this now as an adult, to look back at, oh, the day my favorite player was traded. But unless you are that fan as a kid, and I mean, I was not a basketball fan. I was not a baseball fan. I was not a football fan at that point. I've come to appreciate a lot of other things growing up, but I was a hockey fan and a Montreal Canadiens fan and a Patrick Waugh fan, almost in that order. I mean, it was brutal. It was just absolutely brutal. Like, I can remember, and again, check it out, chapter 5 in the book, I remember the striped Montreal Canadiens toque I was wearing. I remember the starter jacket that I had gotten the previous Christmas. I remember the tear stains coming down the front where it said the word Canadiens down the Velcro part that covered the zipper. I remember that the disco 70s lunch hour had just ended on the radio. My mom had to pull off the side of the road because she didn't know what to do. Apparently, she had started asking me questions and I just lost her. I was gone. Didn't hear her. Didn't hear a word. I was the most miserable kid on earth to go to McDonald's and order whatever the hell I wanted off the menu, and then go to Dairy Queen and order whatever I wanted off the menu, and then go to the video store and rent 5 Super Nintendo games. And I was miserable. It was awful. And I was skipping school.
Everything was going right, and then that just...
And it was, you know what, maybe it was inevitable. Maybe the team was pointed in a direction that was sort of a downward spiral. Maybe it wasn't a ship that could not have been corrected at that point. But I don't think so. I think when you have the greatest goaltender in the world, you can build around it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that the New Jersey Devils won at least one Stanley Cup that they did not deserve. Sorry. I don't think that that trap system was that great. I think the combination of that and Martin Brodeur won them that cup. I think that Patrick Waugh going to Colorado and winning two more Stanley Cups is not a coincidence. I know he had a great team in front of him.
Where he went, the cup followed. I mean, that's just what he did.
He's a winner.
It's what he was made to do.
Exactly.
And, I mean, I don't think it had that much of an effect on me that day. I kind of just sort of looked at it. I, like I said, I was angry. I was pissed off. That poster came down.
I went into shock. I honestly did. I went into legitimately diagnosable medical shock. It's funny to say now. It's something to think about. And you know what? I know that there's a lot of people out there. I don't know why you'd be listening to this as a hockey podcast who think that that's silly. There are people out there who don't get that emotional attachment. But look, if you've ever been to a movie and cried,
same thing.
Imagine that, except the movie lasts from the time you're 5 years old until the day you die.
Yeah.
And it's on 3 times a week, 7 months a year.
Yeah, man.
That's what this was. This was the main character dying. Gone. Off the show. They wrote him off. They pushed him down an elevator shaft. Now he's on a different network.
Yeah, and it's just, it's, you know, my poster spot stayed empty for a while. And then I adopted Martin, and I put up the Heaton goalie pads one with the devil on it and everything. And it was a turning point for me too, kind of thing. You know, just because it
never quite the same though.
It wasn't right, and it never was right again. No. Montreal has, you know, they've gone through some goalies and stuff, and you know, but they've never come close.
Nope. And then, you know what?
I hope Carey Price can turn into that. You know, I think it'd be amazing. But it's just Patrick Waugh did it from the moment he started.
And that was the thing about Waugh, was it was that swagger. It was in 1986, the 19-year-old kid who ate McDonald's French fries on his way to every game. He was like 120 pounds. He was like a stick. You see him in that championship parade, and it looks like he could barely hold the cup over his head without falling down. Mm-hmm. But it was that je ne sais quoi, not to play the French thing, but it was that. It was something that Mario Tremblay never brought to the team. And the fact that he was the reason that Patrick got pushed out the door killed me. The fact that he was such a terrible coach. The fact that they would hire a guy who won the Stanley Cup with them in that 1986 year as a fourth-line left winger who never liked Patrick Waugh while they played together. Why would you bring this man in to run the team? I mean, just terrible decisions. And I understand I understand that Jacques Demers let Patrick Waugh do whatever he wanted on that team, and that Demers was a pushover, and that Waugh had the run of the room and was a pompous superstar and all this stuff, blah, blah, blah.
The cup.
That's exactly it. Again, it ain't bragging if you back it up. And if you're winning Stanley Cups, go ahead, man. Be a little arrogant. I'll buy with that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Patrick Waugh was the best thing to happen to the Canadiens. They had no business winning two Stanley Cups in 86 and 93.
Neither of those cups.
No, either one. It was total fluke. It was won on the back of a goaltender.
Hands down, both times.
And, you know, damn right the guy can walk in and do whatever the hell he wants. Because, I mean, it's not like he was tooting blow and doing all these stupid things while he wasn't playing hockey. He was eating French fries.
No, he was never a distraction off the ice.
He was always a professional, even when he was a kid.
Exactly.
He came in, won cups, did his thing, stood on his head night in, night out. And there was never a reason for him to be crapped on by that team.
Nope. And the Canadians have never been the same. They haven't fully recovered from that trade. And, I mean, I know that you can look at it and say, you know, enough years have passed that you can blame current management and blah, blah, blah. But I honestly do believe that things like that have a lasting effect on the culture of a team.
It's a very long ripple effect.
And that's exactly it. It's that butterfly effect into the future of a team. And I think that that dynamic changed the Canadiens, because they were the New York Yankees when they had Patrick Waugh. In the early 90s, we were arrogant. Yeah, we were different with the French culture. And, you know, people didn't really like the team necessarily. but you could back it up and you could win. And for that reason, players, free agents, fans, people are attracted to a winner. And look, Muhammad Ali talked all that crap, he won. In the years since, all Montreal represents to free agent players is a media circus without that pedigree. I think a lot of
they've been resting on pedigree for such a long time without having done anything.
A lot of the sparkle, a lot of the gloss of the Montreal Canadiens is gone now. Nobody or very few players want to come play for the Canadiens because they're the Canadiens anymore. And that's the difference. Whereas a lot of players in Major League Baseball will talk about the Yankees when they don't play for them. But realistically, you want to go play, of course. And the NHL Canadiens were that team. Now they're the team that everybody talks trash about for having a bad playing environment.
Well, I mean,
and nobody wants to come here.
The two biggest things working against Montreal are the politics in the province.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing is just getting worse and worse and worse. And it's the fact that Montreal insists upon hiring people to run the team who have played for the team, who are French-Canadian, who are this and that and that. Instead of getting the best person for the job, they get the most appropriate person for the job.
And it's also the media attention as a third factor.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, it's the media, they allow the media a lot of their hiring processes and stuff. And I'm talking for office positions.
Well, just talking about in terms of attention on the players.
Yeah.
And I understand that it affects the culture of the team and that it affects the product on the ice. But I'm just talking about the fact that Shea Weber can go eat at any restaurant in Nashville and he might get 20
relative people. Relative anonymity.
Yeah. 20 people might bug him during the course of dinner.
Yeah.
Matthew Duck can't live with us in this town without being bothered by 40,000 directors. This is just a different environment.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand,
unless you're winning. If you're winning, great. Like I said, hey, listen, Mark Teixeira signed as a free agent with the New York Yankees. He probably can't eat in a restaurant in New York. I don't think he regrets it because they contend every year.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, if you suck as hard as the Canadiens have in the past years, and you still get all the attention, you know, sometimes you want to be able to go. And I think that's also part of the problem. The notoriety that every single one of these players, Carey Price is in town 2 days and was being, you know, bombarded by girls throwing themselves at him and you know, and people wanting autographs and lining up outside practice.
Ladies love the cowboy.
It's true. But it's just, I don't see how it's even possible to be able to focus on putting a winning team together when you have so many distractions from media, from coaching, from politics, from everything.
Well, I think that in order to survive in that environment, you need
armadillo skin.
Yeah, well, sure. That work. Or you can do two things. You can tolerate that. And one, put in place a management structure that is the class of the NHL. The absolute best. All right, we got that back up and running, apparently.
Should be effective. Just keep going.
All right. Yeah. Now we are good to go. Sorry about that. So what you need is two things. You need a class organization. You need to be the absolute model of consistency, the absolute model of how to run a team properly in the National Hockey League. And you're not going to do that by only selecting from French Canadians. I'm not going to get up on my box and start preaching. I've done that a million times about it. But the fact of the matter is, you need the best people possible, and then what you need is not necessarily the best possible player. You don't need to be the New York Yankees. You don't need to sign every big name free agent. But what we do need are players that are willing to show up and do what Eric Cole did last season, which is respect the pedigree of this organization, respect the history of this organization, but buy into a team concept, buy into the fact that you're playing for the crest on your side. That's very hard to do because those types of players don't want to come here. It's very hard to put to be a heart and soul player like a Shea Weber, like any of these guys who we renown upon for their commitment to their team, when you're going to come here and pour your heart and soul into it, knowing that as soon as the tiniest thing goes wrong, every fan in the city is going to burn you in effigy, and every media outlet on earth is going to claim it's because you're not French enough. And why would you come here? And so in order to get those two key elements, if you want to weather the storm that is the Montreal media, you need an organization that's built to hold that kind of weight, and you need a product on the ice that can sustain a winning culture. But because of the media and because of the constant attention, those two things don't want to show up. You can't attract the kind of talent you need to get those two things.
No, I mean, look at it.
That all started with Patrick Waugh.
Yep. And ever since then, you've had guys like Vanilla Cavalier say,
exactly.
No, merci, I don't want to play here.
Exactly.
Too much as Marty St. Louis. I mean, anybody with a French last name who's had a 30-goal season.
Yep. And anybody without a French name who's had a 30-goal season isn't French enough.
Yeah, need not apply.
Exactly.
And it's so crap.
It's a catch-22. I mean, you're caught between a rock and a hard place as a Montreal hockey fan right now. And until... And this is so funny to say, but I don't even know how you can say this without it sounding like just a manager. But this is a very difficult to phrase conversation. The culture of the organization needs to change in such a way that it understands the process of changing culture.
Never will.
Stay with me on this.
Can't.
What I'm trying to say here is that culture, by definition, is a living, breathing reflection of the society from which it stems.
Percy, Quebec, Washington, listen to this.
This is what a culture is. It reflects the mosaic of a society at any given moment. Right?
Absolutely.
All right. So by that definition, we live in a free country, correct?
Ostensibly, yes.
Okay. We'll run with that as a general yes.
Sure.
So in a free country, people come and go as they please. People move around. People shift dynamic. People have children. People don't have children. People die because they have bad habits. Other people live longer because they embrace good habits. People drive like idiots and kill themselves. People don't drive at all and get killed because they're on the whatever. My point being, populations shift constantly in the country we live in, correct?
Yes.
Therefore, if our population is constantly shifting, if our society is constantly shifting, by its very definition, culture must constantly be shifting to reflect that.
Evolving.
It is a living, breathing entity. It is the shadow that follows the development of our society. It is the outline, the product of what we leave behind as a mosaic, is our culture. And now there is a party in this province whose entire premise is based upon and find that it exists in the province. Let me stay relevant. Let me stay on task, lest I be torn apart. There's a heavy influence within the Montreal Canadiens organization which embraces the idea of changing culture, not they want to preserve culture.
Live in the past.
They
freeze
want to
culture.
Literally take something which has never had the ability to stagnate, and they want to freeze frame it at a single moment in time. The only way you can preserve culture, by the very definition of culture, is to take pictures of things, take artifacts, and put them in a glass shelf in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
This was culture in 1995. This was culture in 2005. This was culture in 2015. A preservation of culture is simply a snapshot. You simply cannot do it. And until somebody in the Montreal Canadiens organization wakes up and realizes that in order to truly reflect culture, in order to truly reflect society, you need to be as flexible as the society itself. And instead, we're met with rigidity at every turn. We're met with an unwillingness to turn. And until every single Montreal Canadiens player is eating maple syrup and beans and banging wooden spoons over their knee playing an accordion, there are some people in the organization who are not going to be happy. And this ridiculous notion of preserving culture is the vehicle which they're using to destroy the team I love.
For those of you who aren't from here, you won't probably catch the parallel that this draws to our entire government and our province as it is right now, because this is exactly what the Parti Quebec was.
Again, I'm not going to get up on that.
I'm not
reach against the political party. I've had enough of that.
I'm simply going to say, though, that I'm always
going to be a Montreal Canadiens fan at heart, but I'm probably less than 6 months away from becoming a practicing Calgary Flames fan.
Practicing. I like that.
Yeah, because it's at the point where team and city and province are just no longer a place to be, and you got to cut your losses, pull up your tent pegs, and move on to the next place it's going to work.
And you know something I would honestly say, and something that it pains me to say, is that I'm at a place very similar to you where I still hope the team does well.
Absolutely.
I pull for the team.
100%.
I am afraid of what being a Montreal Canadiens fan says about me to other people. And that's the point, to the point that I disagree with so many of the things that are going on within this organization, that I'm embarrassed by what my fandom of the Montreal Canadiens says about me as a person. I feel like saying, it's honestly like when I tell people I grew up in the South, and then I have to say, but it was a good part of the South, you know, like an open-minded neighborhood. I wasn't in the backwoods sticks for 10 years where people still hold ridiculous opinions.
You always feel the need to justify
yourself.
Exactly.
And I feel the same way where I say, you know, I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan. But. And there's always that notion, just that, where I should feel pride, I feel the need to defend. And where I should want to stand up and thump my chest and say, look at how awesome this is. Like I definitely am of my Atlanta Falcons right now. I can't do that. Even if the Canadians were to start the season red hot and go on this tirade, I would sort of clap politely in the background almost, because I can't join in the celebrations here because I don't agree with so many of the people I would be celebrating with. And I also can't celebrate outwardly, because that sort of makes me look like one of them if I'm outside of the province.
Isn't it mental how, because when it comes down to it, all of the stuff we have just discussed is directly related to the provincial government and all the crap that goes on in our lives.
I don't know that it is. I think that it is related to the same mentality that shapes the policies of the provincial government. I think the same people are driving the motion. I think the same people that want the PQ in power want more French culture in the Canadiens organization. But I think that it's coming from the grassroots. And that's what scares me, is I don't think that this is 15 people with political power pulling strings and influencing public opinion.
No, it's these same people convincing the ignorant.
I think the public opinion put a lot of these people in power. And I genuinely do. I think democracy worked in this case. This is the will of the people. They showed up, they voted, that's fine, but stay the hell out of my hockey team. I don't agree with the political thing, but that's politics. That's what we do. Sometimes the party you didn't want to win wins. So be it. That's why we all got the chance to vote. But for the love of God, stay out of my sports. This is supposed to be the unifying thing. This is supposed to be the thing that brings us all together. And instead, you're just bringing politics to the forefront. And
politics has no place in hockey. It really doesn't.
No.
Yet, in this place, it dictates it. That is why we hired not the best coach available, but the best French coach available. And we haven't even seen this guy have a chance to coach yet. So who the hell knows what's going to happen if and when there ever actually is an NHL season. Maybe he will be fantastic and we'll be like, huh, Mark who? But I don't think so.
I hope so, but I am very disheartened by the fact that the man we hired to do the job was run out of Pittsburgh because he couldn't win with Sidney and Evgeny. And it's not just like they weren't ready yet, because the moment they brought in Dan Bylsma, they went like 40-11 to finish the season and won the Stanley Cup immediately.
Incredible.
Like a direct line. Like, they pushed Therrien out the door, they brought in Dan Bylsma, and they instantly won the Cup. Like, there was no play, he had time to implement. Like, literally, he took the same players in the same building in the same year
and immediately took them from a losing team to a team that was 40-11-5 or something like that, and won the Stanley Cup. I just...
Yeah.
And there you are. All right. So you know what? We've ranted. We've raved. We have filled the extra half hour. You have been listening to Off the Crossbar live, presented by BackSportsPage.com. A sad day in the NHL. We thought we had a deal. We didn't have a deal. Great day, however, for Canada's World Junior Program. Apparently, it looks like we're going to be having a very, very solid roster. I know a lot of American fans also exceptionally happy to see a lot of their NHL caliber talent making that team as well.
Can't wait to see a World Junior Gold come back to Canada.
Oh, it's been 3 years. I just can't wait to see hockey that means something.
Yep.
The other games are great. They really are. I get a chance to watch the AHL. I get a chance to watch the CHL. Any chance I have, I will watch hockey. It's not quite the same. I mean, I'm a pro hockey pundit. It's what we do. We need the game back, and I just can't wait to see it. So,
I would just like to mention to all of our fans up there to go and check out www.offcrossbar.com. As you know, that's crossbar with a K. And on the front page, you'll find my latest article entitled Life Without Hockey. Can there be? Check it out.
Yeah, that should be fantastic. I meant to tell you that earlier, live on the air with the CHL, I'm having great insight on the fact that we are not live without a very, very thin layer of a multifaceted organization. So, about some hockey. We say it every time we get in front of a microphone. Check out the local teams. Check out the high school teams. Check out the major junior teams, the college teams.
Get on the ice and play some hockey.
Absolutely. Go buy a stick. Have fun. That'll be it for the night.
Indeed.
All right, everybody. You've been listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by offthecrossbar.com and, of course, backsportspage.com, where there are a lot of big things in the works.
Check it out.
Go check them out. As well, I am the man they call Crossbar, K. Ross Reed, signing off on behalf of Adam Orson Wells and James, the most silent man in radio, Foster. Everybody have a great night, and we will check with you next week when we're talking about the deal that falls through next Wednesday.